Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business, and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, welcome. My first guest today is psychotherapist Dr. Joanne Stern. We'll be looking at some challenging issues that are becoming more prevalent and therefore affecting many families across the U.S. And coming up at 12:30, we're joined again by eBay specialist and award-winning eBay trainer Kevin Boyd. He was hugely popular when we spoke to him back in October on how to make money on eBay, eBay 101. And today he's joining us to talk about advanced sales and buying techniques that work to your advantage, and most importantly, how to improve your bottom line, how to maximize your profit. But first, I'm pleased to welcome Dr. Joanne Stern. She is an expert in family relationships and communications. She's been a psychotherapist for more than 20 years and a parent for 33 years, including 5 years as a single mom. And I mention that because I think it's important to know that she's walked the walk, not just practiced it. In 2002, she also became an EEG neurofeedback practitioner to address a variety of disorders, including attention deficit disorder, anxiety, and depression. Dr. Joanne Stern, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Vicki. Thanks for having me.
And I should have said you have a new book that's come out. It's called Parenting is a Contact Sport, 8 Ways to Stay Connected to Your Kids for Life. So I want to talk today about older kids, maybe adult kids.
Uh-huh.
But first of all, tell us a little bit about why you say parenting is a contact sport.
Because it's time to get off the sidelines and jump into the game. Parenting is a contact sport means that real contact with your kids is not just hugging them or spending time with them or doing activities with them, but most of all, it's about talking with your kids and being involved in their daily lives in a caring and meaningful way.
Something that I think probably people are finding more and more challenging with, everybody has TVs in rooms and they're texting and busy lives. But anyone who's a parent knows that you can't just switch off that parenting button. No matter how old the child, you can't stop caring or worrying just because your child tells you not to. It doesn't matter how old they get.
Yes, parenting is a lifelong adventure. And even when our kids are older and we have grandchildren, now we just include more people in our worry list and our caring list, and it never ends.
Yeah. And one of the things that when I was researching, doing some research for my book, one of the very first things I came across was the notion that baby boomers are now known as the sandwich generation because they find themselves sandwiched between still raising kids or they're very actively involved in their adult kids' lives.
Right.
And they're caring for parents who are living longer. Are you seeing more of that in your daily practice?
I haven't been seeing it in my daily practice, but I know that that's a very true reality. The financial crunch has hit us in such a significant way that people are having to make decisions about where their kids are going to live, and kids are needing to come home and live because they can't pay their mortgages or they can't pay their rent, and parents are faced with the decision of, can I allow my kids to come home with me? And if they're, if I'm a grandchild and those kids bring their own children, it really explodes my own household into numbers that I've long since not, been accustomed to. And then in addition to that, I have exactly, as you say, Vicki, the stress of caring for my own parents. It's a very stressful and significant issue today.
Mm. So I wanted to look at kids returning home because, many people think, oh, great, we've got the house to ourselves at last.
Yeah.
And then, I'm thinking particularly of a couple of people who are very, very close to me and both have called me in tears and it's like, oh no, the kids are coming home. And it's not that they don't love them, but, you know, they're also bringing spouses with them and grandchildren with them. And in, you know, the one case, there's not a lot of room in the house. And
right.
So I wanted to look at, you know, how we cope with these kinds of situations. And, you know, one of my friends was particularly upset because her husband didn't even discuss the matter with her. He talked with his son and said, "Of course you can come home. You know, mummy won't mind at all." Well, mummy did mind.
Right. Parents never stop loving their children, and so when their children have a need, it doesn't matter how old they are, it rips at their heart and tears at their sensitivities, and so it's normal for them to say, "Come on home." Of course. In this case that you just mentioned, it would have been best if he had at least talked with his wife about it, because it makes a huge impact in her life. Next of all, I think after you've made the decision as a couple to allow your children to come home, if that is indeed the decision that you make, you have to set some rules and some boundaries, because you do have to protect yourself. And, you know, you're getting older now, and you do need more rest, and you need more quiet time, and you do need some more time for yourself, because you're not accustomed to the fast-moving pace of families with young children. And so you have to learn to protect yourself, and there have to be some rules and some boundaries set in order to allow these kids to come home.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'd like to look at some of those boundaries that we need to set up first off, because I think setting the ground rules is really important.
Very important.
We want to start off as we mean to go on. So we'll take a quick break. My guest is Dr. Joanne Stern. Her book is called Parenting is a Contact Sport. And you're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Child arrived just the other day. He came to the world in the usual way, but there were planes to catch and bills to pay. He learned to walk while I was away, and he was talking for I knew it. And as he grew, he'd say, "I'm gonna be like you, Dad. You know I'm gonna be like you."
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
If you like to read fiction, check out Book Talk Podcast Reviews, brought to you weekly by Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Go to conversationslive.net and click on the menu at Book Talk to hear reviews of an eclectic range of books. We review fiction from chick lit and mystery to suspense and literary, from new to old, overlooked and forgotten. Check out Book Talk Podcasts today at conversationslive.net. If you'd like to suggest a book for review, email info@conversationslive.net or call 206-414-6159.
Lewis and Clark would be proud. We're exploring new territory on the air every day right here on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, son, I don't know when, but we'll get together then, Dad. We're gonna have a good time there.
Welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest in this half hour is Dr. Joanne Stern. And we're talking about what happens when your adult kids come back home. You think you've got the house to yourself and you can do what you want. You can walk around naked when you feel like it. And suddenly you get the announcement that your kids need to move back home, maybe through divorce, or, you know, especially in this economic situation we're all in now. I have friends who've had to take in kids who've been on the verge of losing homes. And it can be a very difficult situation. But we're talking today about how to get around that. And we have a great expert with us. As I said at the top of the hour, she not only practices this every day as a psychotherapist, but she's walked the walk. So let's look, Joanne, then, at setting boundaries. Where do we begin to set boundaries before anybody's even moved in?
Yes, you do have to do it before they move in. And it's really similar to how you would set boundaries with your own young children when you're raising them. And in my book, Parenting is a Contact Sport, I talk about setting those guidelines with your children, setting the consequences with your children. So when your adult children come home, it's very important that you go over these ground rules with them in a very respectful way. You're always respectful because nobody doesn't want to be treated with respect, but you also have to be taking care of yourself. So my theory is always be an open book with your kids, and that means no matter how old they are, whether they're 3 or 15 or 35, you need to be an open book with your kids. And I think that's the first thing you want to establish when they come home, is that we're going to talk about the issues that come up. We're going to talk about people's feelings, and we're going to be open about it. Otherwise, this could explode and backfire on us. So boundary number one is, or guideline number one, is that we're going to talk before you move in, and Dad and I are going to set down some parameters that we need for ourselves to protect ourselves. That'll be different for every couple. How much time we need for ourselves, when we need to be alone, how we're going to divide up the extra work that comes along with extra people in the house. We're not going to have our kids moving in with us and then acting as though they were children, where the mom does the laundry, does the dishes, cooks the meals. We're going to divide out the work.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to have a guideline that everyone treats each other with respect. We're going to have to make some rules about if there are small children involved, grandchildren, that who is going to parent those children, who is going to discipline those children. And if they get out of line according to the rules of our house, do the grandparents have a right? What do they do? How do you want us to handle it when your children get out of line and it's really infringing on the sanity of our lives? All those things need to be discussed in advance.
Right. And what about, babysitting too is a huge thing, because I know one of my friends is like, geez, I suddenly have no time because I'm babysitting, giving them a break all the time.
Right. That's another one of those rules. And that's why I think it's so important for the grandparents to sit down and make the list of what they think in advance that is important to them.
Yeah.
With the codicil, that we get to change that list as things come along, because none of us has done this before. So we have a right to shift how we feel about this as things go along, because in the end, it's going to be better for everyone. If the grandparents are starting to get resentful and they're not getting time alone or time to rest for themselves, they'll soon be tensions in the household that won't work for anyone.
Right. Is it a good idea to set timelines with the caveat again that you will revisit these?
Absolutely. Always timelines. And I'm glad you brought that up, Vicki, because this is not a forever thing. Of course, each decision is an individual decision depending on the situation of your kids that are moving back in. What is the financial situation they're going through? But absolutely set timelines. And you can also have family meetings, you know, just like you would when your kids were young. You get together on a weekly basis or a regular basis, and you talk about how this is working. Who's getting taken advantage of? Who is feeling left out? Who's feeling overworked and abused?
Mm-hmm.
Who's feeling ignored? And have these open conversations between you and your kids so that everything is above board. Your best chance at having this be a positive experience is that you're open with each other, you're sharing your thoughts and feelings with each other, and you're not holding anything back.
Yeah. Now, what if the adult kids seem too comfortable and show no signs of moving out? How do you motivate them to be working towards that goal?
That's probably the reason that you have these timelines set and that you say, we're going to come back and visit this. And it still, in the end, has to be our decision of how long you can stay here, because it is our home and we do have to take care of ourselves. We love you. We care about you. We'll help you find work. We'll help you find a house. But in the end, when the time comes that you can't be here any longer, it's just you need to be out.
Right. Well, in a lot of cultures, it's very normal. In fact, it's considered expected that several generations live in one house, isn't it?
In some cultures it is, but it's not in our culture.
Right.
And
right.
So that's the only culture we're talking about here. And so it doesn't mean that, you know, over time, perhaps over generations, we couldn't shift and make that absolutely de rigueur for us in our culture, but that takes time to develop that kind of mindset, that kind of attitude. And we're not talking about that here. We're talking about kind of a sudden, unexpected shift.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do have to be gingerly approaching these topics, always with respect, but recognizing that there are a lot of people here who are shifting and making changes to make this work, and every one of them needs to be considered.
Yeah. Now, conversely, some parents, or especially single parents, I know somebody who has a single mother who is in her 60s, and she's had to move in with them. Same kind of boundaries and guidelines before this takes place?
Absolutely the same kind of boundaries, because it's the same kind of issues, really, coming from the other end, but the issues are still the same. The person who's home it is originally needs to take care of him or herself. They're the ones who are being infringed upon, so to speak, and it isn't that they wouldn't do that willingly and generously, but after it starts, they may realize that feelings come up, issues come up, difficulties and challenges come up that they weren't expecting. So you have to remain flexible with this and constantly reevaluate the decision and try to come up with a solution that works for everyone.
Yeah, it sounds good. Now, what about blended families? Let's look at communication in blended families, because I know that's a big issue in America, a huge issue, because there are so many blended families here. And you were saying during the break that you have a huge blended family,
too. I am
too.
Part of a blended family. Between the two of us, we have five kids.
You really do walk the walk.
I really do walk that walk.
Yeah.
I have two daughters and three stepsons, and three of them are married. I have four grandchildren. One's brand new. So we have been working with our blended family for about 18 years is when my husband and I got together. And so we've gone through a lot of phases with these children. We actually have been very blessed and very fortunate that we have not had a lot of trouble, but I know that that is not always the case. There are so many scenarios in blended families that can cause complications, depending on where the kids live, which parent has them, how the visitation goes, whether one parent has kids, the other parent doesn't. It goes on and on and on. And there, we all want to be the happy Brady Bunch. I know when we started our blended family, I just envisioned that we would instantaneously be this happy Brady Bunch of people who just loved and cared for one another and were out for each other's well-being. And it isn't necessarily the case. Love grows, and you have to be very patient about allowing that love and that relationship to grow. And so the complications come in myriad ways, but certainly when discipline issues come up, who has the right to discipline? When sensitive issues come up, who talks to them? How do, you know, are the kids competitive with one parent or the other? The list goes on, and it's not always rosy, quite frankly.
Yeah. What if you don't mind sharing, what have been some of your biggest challenges in keeping a blended family moving forward?
For me, I think it was simply that I didn't get close enough to my stepsons as fast as I had envisioned that I would. I was ready to embrace them and not be their mom, but be a caring, loving adult in their family that they could come to for anything. I mean, the motto in my book, the basic underlying principle of my book, Parenting is a Contact Sport, is to be open with your kids, create a safe environment for them, and be the person your kids talk to even during the tough times, the person that your kids listen to even during the tough times. With my own daughters, I had that because we had a history from the day they were born, of course.
Mm-hmm.
With my stepsons, they were already teenagers and older teenagers, and they really didn't exactly need a mom. I don't know that they really trusted a mom, and they certainly weren't going to just open up to me and scoop me up with open arms. They were already out of the house and beginning college, so it took time, and it really forced me to practice patience, which isn't a natural virtue of mine, and to take it slowly and realize this is a lifetime journey. And if I'm not close to them this year, I'm just going to commit that to them and to myself that I'm there offering this relationship for them. I'm offering a sanctuary for them in our home, a safe place. I do respect them. I will share with them. I will be the person that they can trust to come to if and when they're ready, and just leave that out there for them so that when they are ready, I'm there.
Yeah,
not get turned away by a momentary disappointment in how they treat me or how they include me or don't, but just stay committed to my decision to build a relationship with them. And gradually, slowly, over time, that has indeed happened, and I feel very blessed that it has.
Yeah, sounds good. Sounds good advice. And I love this in the book. You say in parenting, you don't have to do it right. You just have to know when you've fallen asleep at the wheel.
Yes, I believe that having a relationship, a connection with your kids is the default position. So, for example, I live in ski country. I live in Aspen, Colorado. And so I often think the default position in skiing is when you get off balance, or you're going down a steep, bumpy slope, you get on the balls of your feet centered over your skis, and you put your hands forward. So whenever you get in trouble, go to that position. If you're riding Western horseback and you get in trouble, put your feet forward and lean back. That's your best chance of getting back into balance on that horse. And when you get off balance, when you fall asleep at the wheel, when you're parenting and you make mistakes, which we all do, we all will, and in my book, Parenting is a Contact Sport, I'm very open about the mistakes that I made as a parent and recognizing that no one's perfect. We only have to be good enough, and that's creating a safe haven for our kids in a place where they feel comfortable and trusting to talk with us. So the default position in parenting is fall back onto the relationship. If some crisis happens in your family, first and foremost, don't panic. Secure the relationship. There's plenty of time to solve the problem after your kids know that you understand, that you care, and that you're on their side.
Yeah, and you do talk very openly about some of your fears with your daughters when they were growing up. I wanted to talk about your father. You talk about your father in the introduction because I know many people do have fractured family relationships.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things you say about your father, you didn't have a fractured relationship. I'm not trying to say that, but you said after he died, you had questions about what kind of man he really was. And so that affected your parenting. Well, your parenting changed even before then, right?
Yes. And I didn't want there to be questions for my kids after I was gone, and they could no longer ask me, because so often our own adult relationships are a result of an outpouring of the kind of relationships we had with our parents and the baggage, the unresolved issues and hurts and pain that we carry forward, and then we dump them on our mates. And I didn't want that, to the best of my ability, to happen to my kids. So I wanted to be an open book with them. I didn't want there to be secrets. I wanted them to know who I was, what I believed, how I thought, how I felt about things, the crazy adventures of my past and my mistakes. And so my bottom line principle was to have an open, mutual sharing relationship where they really knew who I was, and the other result of that would be that they would feel comfortable coming to me, because the most important goal of parenting is that your kids can talk with you about the difficult stuff in their life, and that they can gain the wisdom, the knowledge, and the experience that you've had in your life, because they're also willing to listen to you.
Mm. You say if you do make mistakes, apologize quickly and begin again. Why?
because your kids already know that you've made a mistake. It's
right.
not a secret. So it does not make you weaker. It makes you stronger, and they respect you more if you apologize to them. And then you have the opportunity to rewind and start again. So it's never too late to rebuild, to improve, to renew your relationships with your children. They're the most complicated relationships on earth, parent-child relationships. But I've never met a child at any age who doesn't want to have a good relationship with their parents. So you have every reason to want to make them the very best you can make them.
Yeah, I'll put a lot of value into it. Really quickly, because we're almost at the end of our segment, if there is no communication between you and your child, or you as a child and your parent, where do you begin?
It's never too late to rewind and start again. You begin by apologizing to them, telling them that maybe you missed the mark, maybe you weren't there for them, maybe you were so self-absorbed that you didn't realize that they had needs, maybe you didn't listen enough, you talked too much, you didn't listen, but you missed them. They're valuable, they're precious to you, and you would like to start again. And you're willing to take the time, you're committed to taking the time to rebuild those relationships with them. That's my message in my book, Parenting is a Contact Sport.
Well, it's been great talking to you, and some great information in this book. Would you give out your website, Joanne?
Yes, Vicki, thank you. My website is www.parentingisacontactsport.com, and there's a lot of information on the website. There's also a link to buy the book online. It's available on Amazon, at Barnes & Noble, and also Borders, and it should be in local bookstores.
Yeah, and you have a great recommendation on the front from Dr. Stephen Covey, one of my all-time favorite authors, the author of The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. He said, this transcends the usual parenting advice and focuses on one-to-one relationships. Dr. Joanne Stern, thank you for being such a great guest today.
Thank you, Vicki, so much.
And her book, again, is called Parenting is a Contact Sport, 8 Ways to Stay Connected to Your Kids for Life. And coming up next, we have eBay award-winning training expert, Kevin Boyd. He's going to tell you how to maximize your profit, not just sell on eBay, but maximize your profit on eBay. Please stay with us. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Coming next week on Conversations Live, we're Vicki St. Clair. NPR correspondent and award-winning journalist Eric Weiner says, change your place and you can change your life. He joins Vicki to share what he learned on his journey around the globe in the geography of bliss, one grump search for the happiest place in the world. Join us Monday, May 4th at noon, and check conversationslive.net for show details.
Does work feel like a puzzle and you don't know where all the pieces are, or you have all the pieces but you don't know what the picture should look like? Then join me, Denise Rubin, 30-year vet in human resources. I've sat in the boardroom and in the executive offices, and I'll share with you the trials and tribulations of the workplace and how together we can solve the workplace puzzle one piece at a time. Tune in to Work Does Matter, Fridays from 1 to 2 in the afternoon on Alternative Talk 1150. Visit my website at workdoesmatter.com.
Forget their space and come check out our space on the web, 1150kknw.com, and find out about Alternative Talk 1150 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And my guest now is Kevin Boyd. He joined us back in October. We talked about eBay 101. And I got so many emails after he'd last been on the show. I know he was a very popular guest, and he's joining us today to talk about maximizing profit on eBay. So we're going to continue the conversation. Kevin W. Boyd was presented eBay's Education Specialist Award for Excellence. He's been selling, teaching, and consulting on building eBay businesses for 8 years. His books are, I'm just looking here, eBay Business at Your Fingertips, eBay Rescue Profit Maker, and eBay Rescue Problem Solver. Kevin, welcome.
Thanks, Vicki. Great to be here again.
It's great to have you back. It's really funny because I hired a new freelance assistant a couple of weeks ago, and she works at a library somewhere. And she said, oh, there's this great guy. His name's Kevin Boyd, and he really knows his stuff. And I said, well, we already have him booked on the show.
Oh, that's terrific. She was at one of my classes at the library?
Yeah, I think, I'm not sure if she helped put it on or what, but...
Oh, that's great to hear.
So, last time you joined us, you shared some basics of what it takes to buy and sell on eBay and how people can make additional money or even start their own business on eBay. And I wonder, for anyone who's been living off the grid for a few years, if you'd just give us a, you know, one or two lines about what eBay is and how people can get involved on it.
Sure. eBay started back in 95, and it really started when the founder... his wife collected Pez dispensers. And so they needed a way to kind of trade Pez dispensers among their friends. He created an online site to do it. The internet and the web especially was kind of new at that point. So that's what he did. He created that. The Beanie Babies were popular at the time. So for a while, that's what it was, trading Pez dispensers and Beanie Babies. But then it grew from there tremendously, and now all sorts of things are sold on eBay, including eBay motors, RVs, boats, campers, things around the house. There are professionals that sell on eBay. Manufacturers, retailers sometimes will sell items either to expand their sales channel or maybe to liquidate items that aren't moving so well. So it's a huge gamut, over 6 million items are added every day on eBay.
Wow. That is huge.
Yeah.
You say the number one question, because you're one of eBay's top trainers. I remember from last time you were only one of three who received a special award.
Yeah, they give three awards out each year. There are over 1,000 instructors worldwide, and I've won the award three times now.
Well, that's pretty good.
Thank you.
And I know that you say the number one question you're asked by students is, what should I sell on eBay? And you say they're really asking me, you know, to choose a product for them. But tell me what your response is when you're asked that question.
Well, they want me to say, well, go and sell consumer electronics. That's what's really hot right now, or sell cell phone products or whatever. But really, that's the wrong question. The question isn't, what should I be selling right now? Because those fads come and go. What's hot now may not be hot 6 months or a year from now. What you really need to know is, how do you go about finding profitable products to sell? Now, this could be any type of product, whether it's a mass market product, which, you know, that's where the hot items are. That's where all the activity is mass market items.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is, the profit isn't in mass market. The profit is in niche market. So when people say, what should I sell? I say, don't necessarily go sell what's hot, what people are running to the retail shops at the malls to buy. Think outside that box. Think about what people need that they can't find in retail shops. And that's more niche, maybe accessories to those products. I think a good thing to keep in mind is, does it have high demand and does it have low competition?
Mm.
And those are some tools that I talk about in the books, where you can find that information just within seconds to see what your competition is and if there's any demand for it. There are a lot of areas on eBay that are saturated, and you have to weed through that to find the areas and the products that will be profitable.
Yeah, and there are some tools. I'd like to, if we have time, go into some of those. I think we can learn a lot from failure, whether it's our own or somebody else's. So I wanted to look at some of the top reasons that sellers and businesses actually fail on eBay.
Mm-hmm.
Because you say oftentimes people give up when success really is just around the corner, or if they adjusted their program a little, they'd probably find success. So what are some of the top reasons businesses fail?
I think one of the biggest reason is that they don't conduct their research first to make sure that the items are going to be profitable. Their product selection decisions are based just on hunches. Hey, here's a product here. I'll bet that'll be a winner on eBay. Or maybe it's based on cost. They'll be somewhere, maybe at a trade show or maybe at an outlet mall that are liquidating some items, and they say, wow, look how cheap this item is. This is a $140 item, and look, I can get it for $20. And maybe the manager says, hey, if you want to take the whole pallet, I'll let you have it for $10. Mm. And so they say, I'll take the whole pallet. So here's this pallet of goods that now go into their warehouse. It used to be their garage, now it's their warehouse, okay?
Right.
And so they list their first item, and guess what happens? It's going for $5 on eBay. So they say, well, let me tweak this a little bit. Let me change the keywords and try it again. And it's still bringing in about $5. After about four or five sales like that, they realize their mistake. They have purchased items to sell. They got a whole pallet full in the garage. It's going to take them a year to sell through, and every one of them is going to be at a loss. That is one of the biggest mistakes new eBay sellers make, is how they make their product decisions. It's based on hunches rather than doing the research on eBay to find what these things are going for before they make the purchases in the first place.
Mm. You talk about the eBay rut in the beginning of Problem Solver, eBay Rescue Problem Solver. I wonder if you'd share with us what the eBay rut is, because you say that's another big mistake that beginning sellers make.
Yes, the eBay, I'm sorry, something happened on the phone. The eBay what?
Rut.
Rut.
Rut. Is it my accent?
No, it's not the accent.
Say rut, Eric.
I'm hearing something on the phone. I'm sorry. Yeah, the eBay rut. And that's where eBay sellers get into a rut where maybe they're not focused on profit. You see, every business has to have one goal in mind, and that's profit. Now, in eBay, an eBay business can be fun. And sometimes even as a seller, I forget that eBay is fun. I'm more focused on the profit.
Mm-hmm.
But it's too many times it's the other way around, where they're thinking of the fun. And what happens is they'll list, sell, pack, ship. But at the end of the month or at the end of the quarter, they're not making any money. And when I consult with them and I see what's going on, I say, you know, you really don't have a business here. You have a shipping hobby, because that I hope you enjoy it, because that's really all you're doing is shipping around the country or around the world. And that is a rut that they get into, and they never really analyze. They never pull their weeds. They never realize that, hey, this item isn't selling. Maybe it was selling a year ago, but it's not bringing in the profit today. You need to pull that weed, liquidate those items, and bring in some stuff that's hot now.
So you also talk about doing a reality check right up mm-hmm. front. How is your eBay business doing? You talk mm-hmm. and you give some great advice on, checklists on that. And you also talk about charting your roadmap, because, you know, most people when they start a business would do some semblance of a business plan, even if it's, you know, a half page. It doesn't have to be a full-blown 30-page thing.
Right.
But I think often when they sell on eBay, they all those rules go out, and you say you should chart your roadmap. So talk a little bit about that, because I know you have a form on your website for that.
Yeah, there's some official forms for doing that, because a lot of people, when I say make a business plan, their eyes roll in the back of their head, and they're thinking, oh my goodness, I have to do pro forma statements or something. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm saying just sit down and think about what your business is about. Why do you want to sell on eBay? Is it to just clear the attic, or is it to have a little bit of part-time income? Maybe it's to have a full-time income. Whatever it is, that will help you chart the course for where you should go and what you should sell and what you should concentrate on in the near term and in the future.
Okay. You talk about bait products, Kevin. I wonder if you'd share what bait products are and why we should get involved in that.
Well, bait products are used primarily for when you have an eBay store. Just for the listeners, an eBay store is very similar to having your own website, but those web pages are on eBay. But what's nice about it is that every product that's in your web store, your eBay store, is all your product. So there are no other competing sellers in your eBay store. Now, here's the thing. An eBay store item, if you list your item in your eBay store, it does not normally show up on a standard search result. So a buyer who's looking for a particular product will usually go and type in the keywords of whatever they're looking for, and that's called a standard search that they make. So the results that come back for that will show listings that are either fixed price or auction-style type of listings, but not store listings. So what that means is it's kind of the saying, if you build it, they won't come because they don't know you exist, you see.
Right.
So it's not a good idea, sort of like a website, to say, well, if I just put up my store and put all my items in the store, if I sit back and wait for the activity, there won't be a lot of traffic. So that's the purpose of a bait product, is that you have your items in your store that are mostly accessories and add-on items to the standard items, the most popular items that you sell. So the more popular items, the ones that get a lot of traffic, a lot of attention, a lot of bids, you put those in standard listings on eBay. And then in your description, you say, hey, if I'm selling the green mixer, the green KitchenAid mixer, I also sell the matching blenders in my store. Click here. And then they go to the store and they look at the matching blender. So they buy not only your mixer, but your store. And so those standard auctions are the bait auctions to bring in the high traffic that you can take that and send them to your store.
Oh, okay. So it's just like fishing.
Yes, exactly.
Fishing for new customers.
Yes.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Kevin Boyd, eBay specialist, and you're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Please stay with us.
Looking for unconditional love, an exercise buddy, or a great listener? Paws has the dog or cat of your dreams, just waiting to meet you. We've made thousands of perfect matches since 1967, because everyone needs a warm, safe place to call home. Find out more today at paws.org or call 425-787-2500.
Commune with the Pop Oracle on the Radio 8 Ball Show. I'm Andras Jones, the host of the Radio 8 Ball Show, where we answer your questions by picking songs at random and interpreting them as the answers, like picking musical tarot cards. That's the Radio 8 Ball Show on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Don't miss the Radio 8 Ball Show, Fridays at noon, right here on Alternative Talk, 1150.
Stay informed with news, traffic, and weather at the top of the hour, weekdays on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And I'm talking with Kevin Boyd. We're going a little bit deeper into eBay. We first talked about this last October. We kind of covered eBay 101 basics. And if you missed that show and you're interested in learning more about eBay, you can find a link to that show on our homepage at conversationslive.net. And of course, Kevin is one of eBay's top trainers. And when did you say that training course is coming up to Everett College?
All right. On May 5th, from 6 to 9, we're at Everett Community College. And also on May 7th, 6 to 9, at Green River Community College.
Okay. If they're not already sold out. I heard you sell out really quickly.
Thank you.
So I wanted to talk about, well, first of all, I have to ask you, how is the recession affecting eBay sellers in general? I'm guessing just like any business, some businesses are doing better than others.
Well, it definitely has. And I would say for about the last year, it had been affecting eBay sellers. Buyers have been a little more picky than in years before. They're looking more for value items, items that they can use and that they need. But rather than paying retail, let's go see if we can find these on eBay, either new or possibly used. You know, Johnny needs violin lessons, so we want to buy a violin. But rather than paying retail, let's see if we can find a used one on eBay. That's the sort of thing that's happening. So over the last year or so, I have noticed a dip in sales. Here's the good news. About the last 2 months after the first of the year, I started noticing an uptick in my eBay sales. So whether that's a trend, let's hope so. But I'm not quite back to pre-slump sales of maybe 3 years ago, but I'm heading in that direction. And, you know, 2 months straight is a good trend.
Yeah, well, let's hope that's a good sign.
Yes.
I wanted to talk about marketing, how we market on eBay, how we market our business. And you say a positive marketing mindset is important. You ask the question, can a positive attitude affect profit? Most MBAs and CPAs would say no. You tend to disagree with them. Tell us why.
Well, a lot of it has to do with how you're going to approach your sales and how you're going to market your items. I think that a positive mindset, as opposed to just crunching numbers, will help you weather the storms, especially right now, and will keep that positive attitude going. I think if there's one word I could use to encourage people, it's persistence. You don't always hit a home run the first time up, and some people fail at that.
Mm.
And so it's how you handle that failure the first time or maybe even the second or the third time. I read a recent article where it said, it got my attention, it said, are you a loser or a failure? And I thought, oh, are those my two options? but what they were saying was, it depends on how you pull yourself up after a problem. Let's say that the first few items that you sell on eBay, maybe they didn't work. Well, do you quit right there and you say, you can't make any money on eBay, this whole thing, it's too much trouble, and you quit? If you do, that's called being a loser.
Mm-hmm.
Where a person who fails, they may fail a few times, but they're persistent with it, and they keep going. They eventually figure it out, and then they become a winner.
Yeah. Now, I know you talk about the fact that you've failed, you know, sometimes yourself. What has been the biggest lesson that you've taken away from some of your failures?
The absolute biggest advice I can get from my biggest failure was when I was early in my sales and I didn't know how to find products to sell. And so the process that I mentioned earlier about making sure that you've checked it out, check out what they're going for on eBay before you purchase your items, is the biggest difference between success and failure on eBay.
Mm-hmm.
You have to know your market. You have to know what that product is going for and stop making product hunches and make sure thing purchases.
Yeah. You talk about expanding your customer base with marketing, and you talk about My World and about the seller pages. What's a My World page?
Well, that mostly is kind of like an About Me or About Us, like on a website where you'd have an About Me page. And that's similar to the same thing. eBay calls it My World. And you can talk about why someone would want to purchase from you as opposed to your competition. This isn't a place where you go and you talk about your dogs and pictures of your jet skiing. It's why someone would want to make a purchase, especially if you sell more expensive items. Why would they buy from you as opposed to your competition?
Mm. And you talk there about here as well about, you know, general things that we do in regular businesses that I think sometimes people forget to do on online stores. And that's discussion boards, include advertising flyers in your packages, create newsletters, anything to generate a buzz.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. Yeah, we sort of forget to market. I mean, what's the beauty of eBay is that you have an instant marketplace. If you have good keywords, which is the number one component for a successful listing, are the keywords that you use. And if you have good keywords, people will find you, and here come the bids and here comes the traffic. But we tend to also forget about other things that we can do to market our business. I mean, we can attend trade shows. You can hand out flyers. For your customers who purchase from you, put another flyer in there. Maybe it's a discount coupon for a future sale, or give them some reason to come back to you. When you're at trade shows, have business cards. You can have the URL, in other words, the web domain address of your eBay store, if you have an eBay store, right on your business card, and you can use that in place of a website. And those are types of marketing tips that a lot of people don't think of.
Mm, so don't just sit there and think having your eBay page is going to do it all for you.
Exactly, yeah.
What for people who want to expand internationally, and I'm guessing you can only do that with certain projects, products rather. But what are some of the pluses and minuses for those who want to sell internationally?
Well, I think that the pluses is that all you have to do is check a box in your listing to say that you're wanting to sell internationally, and you can choose which countries you want to sell to. And you can increase your sales 15-20% almost immediately just by checking those boxes. Especially now with the price of the dollar, there's a lot of international buyers who are looking for deals because maybe the euro is worth more than the dollar. So you can do that. Those are pluses. The biggest plus is that you can increase sales immediately, 15-20% jump just by doing that. The negatives are now you've got to ship internationally, but I'll tell you, it's really not a big deal anymore. eBay automates all of this. You can now do. In fact, I just got a sale this morning from the Philippines, and all I have to do is click a button in my eBay page. It will print out the shipping label for me. It prints out the custom forms, and I select carrier pickup because I'm using the U.S. Postal Service. They come out the next day, pick up the package. It doesn't cost me anything for that. I mean, that's how easy it is to sell internationally.
Mm.
And I think the one thing to keep in mind for international sales is a lot of people get scared about, what if someone from Nigeria is buying my items and that sort of thing. I do show you in the books how to avoid those types of scams, and it's very simple. In your My eBay tab, you can set up buyer requirements, where a buyer has to meet certain requirements or they're not allowed to bid from you, or to bid on your item. And one of those requirements is they're not allowed to bid if they live in a country that you do not want to ship to. And then when you create your listing, you say which countries you're willing to ship to. And that stops all those scams from all those other countries.
Oh, good.
Mm-hmm.
There's certainly enough of them around.
Yes.
One of the things that I'd notice is a lot of people charge for handling, and some people say they get a good markup on that. You definitely recommend against that in the book. Yes, charge for handling, but don't price yourself out of the market.
Right. Well, it's very easy now to compare shipping costs. Whenever you do a search, there's your shipping cost compared to everybody else in a row. And I'll tell you this, that's a real hot button with buyers, is if they feel that they're being gouged by a seller. And it's a good way to end your sales, meaning that people won't buy from you if you try to gouge.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to add a couple of dollars handling because, first of all, either you're having to package the box with the item in the box, or you're having to pay someone else to do it. And maybe the cost of the box itself may run you 50 cents, a dollar, something like that. So it's all right to add a couple of dollars, but never beyond that.
Well, Kevin, we're at the end of our show, and again, you've given that great information. You talk a lot in the book about spying on giant competitors. What's the number one thing you'd say we need to find out about our competitors? We've got about a minute.
One of the things I like to do about once a quarter is I'll go find my giant competitors, people that are listing 800 to 1,000 items on eBay, and I use the methodology in the Profit Maker book to spy on them and find only the top products that are actually being sold and making a great profit. So they'll list 800 items, and I'll go in and cherry pick the 15 or 20 that are actually worth doing.
There you go. Sounds great. Good tip. And let's give out your website for listeners who want to learn more.
Sure. They can go to trainingyouforauctions.com. That's training with the letter U and the number 4, trainingyouforauctions.com. There's a link on my site for upcoming eBay classes.
Okay.
And also there's a link for how to create a website for fun and profit. Those classes are there as well.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Kevin.
Thank you, Vicky.
Appreciate it. And any more, if you didn't catch that, you can check out conversationslive.net and it links straight to Kevin's website. I want to thank each of you for being with us today. We'll be back next week. Until then, live well, live strong.
Coming next week on Conversations Live, we're Vicky St. Clair. NPR correspondent and award-winning journalist Eric Weiner says, change your place and you can change your life. He joins Vicky to share what he learned on his journey around the globe in the Geography of Bliss, one grump search for the happiest place in the world. Join us Monday, May 4th at noon and check conversationslive.net for show details.